You are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM, the best little station in the nation. Welcome to the afternoon. My name is Joellen Schilke. I am the hostess who loves you the mostest. This show is called Art in Your Ear. Great show lined up for you today. Stick with us for some wonderful music. Thank you so much for being out there listening to 88.5. You know that support for WMNF comes from you, our listeners. And Rhyming with Miss Ida, specializing in children's rhyming books such as Poor Old Goat, Sad Little Dog, and more. Details on Miss Ida's children's books are at rhymingwithmissida.com. Thank you.
This is Frankie Mopar with the Retro Jukebox. I'm here pushing the buttons every Wednesday morning, 3 to 6 a.m. Every week, we'll start out the first hour in the 40s and 50s, and then the second hour will start in the early 50s and progress through the 60s and a little 70s. Music is memory, so let's journey through our lives together. The Retro Jukebox, every Wednesday morning, 3 to 6 a.m. on your community conscious radio station, WMNF. If you can't make it in person, the show is available 24/7 at WMNF.org.
Background. I love this band, but I mainly play it because I like saying the name. This is Sean Lee's Ping Pong Orchestra with Clint Eastwood. But I gotta take Sean Lee down because I have such stellar guests. In the studio with me is Sarah Howard.
Hello.
Hello. Do I have the right mic on? You say hello again.
Hello.
I do. Hi. And then on the phone, I have Bosco Sodi. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for calling in. Are you up in New York?
Now in New York, yes.
Nice and warm there. So you have, I'm so excited. You came on the show, you and Sarah were here a couple of years ago when you came and you built a wall in front of the USF Contemporary Art Museum. And now you're back with a show there called Basico.
Basico.
Basics?
Yes.
And how can I ask, when you know that you're going to do a show like this, Bosco, when you have the opportunity to sort of get in there and you know the space and you know the place and you sort of know the people, does that shift things within you as to what you want to show or how you want to show it? Or is your work very self-contained and wherever it is, that's fine, it doesn't matter?
Well, I like a little bit to do the approach of do site-specific work. So normally what I like to do is, when it's possible, is to go first to the space, to look at the space, and then to decide which works can function over there. And then, of course, to create a dialogue with the curators. And but I try to make site-specific installations that I think they are more powerful when it's that way.
I agree. And your work comes in, I have to say, all different sizes. And I'm thinking about these large sort of the pieces that you do that are, you know, they're made of extremely solid things and they take up a lot of space, all the way to next week there'll be a workshop where you're making small things, just tiny in the hand things for the seed pods. How is it? How do you sort of know which way you're going to go on something? Is everything planned out ahead, or do you kind of do some and then figure it out, and do some then figure it out?
All my work is very based on the process. So of course, when you're doing the process, a lot of ideas come again, and so it's never totally define what we're going to do, no? It's also very spontaneous and casual. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, on this case, with Tabula Rasa, it's a performance that I did in Washington Square Park last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an exercise of hope, an exercise of how life prevails after everything. We put the number of spheres, the same number of days that New York was officially on COVID. And we put these clay spheres with seeds inside, and we did an installation that was there for 5 or 6 hours, and then people was able to collect the spheres and then put them in a pot with soil in their home, and then the corn grow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like an example of how even in very difficult time there is always hope, there is always the possibility of continuing when everybody gets together.
I love that. Actually, a friend of mine was sent there on my behalf so she could watch some of it and experience it. And I think she went in a sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll go just do this, and then walked away just feeling what you're saying, feeling hope and feeling excited about the gathering of people. All this people came to that and they didn't know each other, and yet sort of in a way they all left related. And so that's where I want to bring Sarah into the conversation now and talk about the importance of people and the importance of either building community or reflecting community, understanding community in your practice, both in the items, like the objects, but also in how you do things and when you do it. And so, Sarah, will you jump in a little bit and talk about how you sort of understand Bosco's stuff, and then, of course, Bosco gets to say it too.
Yeah, thank you. Bosco's work is so amazing, especially these public art projects, which we're delighted to be able to sort of do an encore to the Muro project back in 2019. And with the Tabula Rasa, which is clean slate in Latin, it really does give us a sense of bringing people together for this shared experience and building community through this creative transformative act, and giving everybody a chance to not only make and be part of the collaborative process of making the seed pods, which are clay spheres that'll be embedded with corn seeds, heirloom corn seeds, but also to take them back to their own domestic spaces, to grow them, again, tapping into these elemental ideas that are the foundation of Bosco's practice about sort of the natural materials, the raw materials of the earth, the cycles of nature, tapping into like duration and sort of growth and all that comes with that. And so I think there's like a bit of a like slowing down and thinking about those kinds of things, especially as we've experienced over the past few years. And so this, I think this project's a really excellent way to bring people together to be able to celebrate that.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And that's curator Sarah Howard from the Contemporary Art Museum at USF. On the line, too, I've got Bosco Sodi, who is here, who's talking about his work. He's got a bunch of different things coming up over the next few weeks and has an exhibition up at the USF Contemporary Art Museum through March 5th. Bosco, Sarah was talking about, you know, the way that people get to interact with you and with your work and interact with each other through this. And I remember the first time I ever saw your work and how it sort of hit every single sense that I had. Like it was all I could do to not like run in there and start touching everything. But it sort of speaks to all the senses. It has a smell. It has a texture. You can sort of going through it, it reflects back sound to you. And I want to talk a little bit about how, we talked for a moment about how looking at the place where that you will be installing the work and putting the work affects it. Will you talk for a moment about how what materials you have or how you want to use things and find things to make this work?
Yes, well, I mean, I'm as I mentioned, I'm very interested in the process more than the outcome. So it's always a kind of experimenting with materials, and I enjoy a lot to work with natural materials and organic materials because at the end, they're not so predictable. The whole philosophy of my work is how the accident, how the non-control, how the passing of time makes things totally unique. And those things, I like to believe that they are more connected to the senses. My work has to be seen and analyzed with the senses, not with the mind. It's something very organic and unique. So normally my approach is that, I mean, I try to experiment as much as possible, and then when I see an accident that it's interesting, when I try to keep it to make it part of my practice and try to do things that are totally new even for me.
And there was a sense, I think, in your work that it's sort of, I mean, it mirror isn't the right word, but it follows a path that a life will follow, that stuff happens and you use what you have there and sometimes may introduce something purposefully into it, but also you talked about like there's accidents and it's sort of, they seem to come together or grow the way a person does. And I know that's a little bit of a leap, but I like that idea of that they sort of have their own development with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very natural process and also very... I'm counting a lot in with casuality. For example, all the sack paintings that are in the show, it was during the pandemic. I went I moved to Casa Huavi, my studio in the coast of Oaxaca, where I have my foundation, and there was no canvas to paint because everything was closed because of the pandemic. And one day when we went to the market to buy the groceries, They give us all the vegetables in this kind of in this sack paint sacks that they used to be used for to transport chili.
Mm-hmm.
It's very old sacks, very with a lot of stains, with things rot on the sacks. And then I fell in love with the sacks. I said, well, I'm gonna paint over the sacks. And then I went to the studio, and the only thing I couldn't find was the yellow oil painting, yellow oil painting, red and orange, and I said, "Well, I'm going to make a stone every day," and I had to measure myself not to do too many sacks because there weren't so many.
So I was doing
like the vitamins, one a day. But I mean, it was a complete casualty because I was desperate to paint.
I bet.
There was not canvas. There was, and then I found these beautiful sack paintings with a lot of personality, but also with a patina and with a very interesting history on the back that they smell like chili. And I begin to appropriate them the textures of the sack, and I begin to do all these suns every day.
Yeah.
But it's very casual, you know. I saw them in the market. Say, well, this can function. I did one, and I like it a lot. And then I said, well, I'm going to do one every day during the the pandemic at Casawari.
I feel like though the pandemic has caused all this different grief and difficulty, that there's these things that keep emerging from it that are huge. And the way artists have reacted and made do or figured out something new, to me, has been one of the most brilliant parts of the pandemic.
I agree totally. So, I think it will be very nice one day to do a show of all the pandemic group works of different artists, no?
Yeah, totally. I agree 100%. Yeah. So what is your relationship when the work is done? Like when you're finished with a piece and it's done. Is it still something that you have sort of like an ongoing tension with or relationship with? Or is it like, okay, that's great, I'm moving on? How do you feel about your old work?
Normally I'm moving on, but then on that I'm very unattached to the work in that way, because when it's finished, it's finished. But then you have the feeling when you see it again after a long time, like the Sack paintings, I haven't seen them they were in a box. And you have this kind of connection, you know, like it's a sentimental collection. At the end, they are like your kids, you know. I'm not so attached. When I finish, I don't miss the work. But then when you see it, you really feel this joy of finding an old friend, you know?
I think, too, there must be an element for artists of time travel, because the work, no matter what, sort of has that DNA of the moment in it.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, yeah.
It brings back a lot of memories.
So, dear listeners, that was Bosco Soti, and in the studio with me is Sarah Howard from USF. There's a show up right now at the USF Contemporary Art Museum, Bicycle. My language is bad. But there's also, and I want to talk a little bit about how these workshops came about. There is going to be next Wednesday, what are my days of the week? Next Wednesday from 11 to 2 up at USF at the ceramic studio, you're going to be making, or you're inviting the community to come make seed pods are these corn seeds from, they're corn, Mexican corn, or?
They're heirloom corn seeds.
Heirloom corn seeds, because probably you can't bring other produce from other countries in.
Right, right.
And this is, let's talk a little bit of why specifically corn.
Well, I think originally when Bosco had done the project, he actually used this sacred trinity of squash and peas and corn, and then through that process they kind of realized that they didn't all fit in a smaller domestic space in a pot growing together. It was good. So we've adapted a little bit, and we're going with corn as more of a, it's a symbolic gesture of sort of, you know, growth, and also taps into or reflects Mexican indigenous agricultural practices that, you know, highlight sustainability and, you know, sort of a mutual care for the land. And we've been delighted to be able to partner with Meacham Urban Farm down in Tampa's downtown, organic farm in Tampa's downtown urban core, to present the distribution. So there's a community workshop that'll be set up for the making of the spheres, and then we'll have a brief drying process where they can harden, and then we'll go and install them at the farm, and we'll have an event from 9 to noon on February 12th, which is a Saturday, when they have their open store hours. And so visitors can come out and collect a seed pod to take home and plant in their own space.
So they're having an art, like taking the art project and making it turn into something else.
Right,
also.
Right. And so they'll also be providing a farm tour and a planting demonstration at 11 o'clock that morning.
Wow.
So I think it'll be a really great community experience to, you know, collaborate with the farm and kind of show what they're offering to mm-hmm. downtown Tampa, and they have a great space down there.
So our, you know, the U.S. has gone, and it happened in a relatively short amount of time, from being 10% to 30% urban or suburban, and 90 to 70% rural and then agricultural. And now, of course, that's flipped, where there's only I think it's 3% of our land in our country is used for agricultural purposes.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I may be wrong about that number, because I was looking at a bunch of stuff before the interview. Mexico has not switched as much, but I'm kind of curious, Bosco, do you in with your foundation or in the area that you're in, do you see people, is it a concern that things are moving away from certain practices and going to other practices? Is it, or, you know?
I mean, there is a big concern about that. No, I mean, also more that slowly we are losing the slow agriculture, you know, like the people that used to have one hectare or 2 hectares of local corn. Everybody switching to seed, genetically modified seeds. Mm-hmm. So those seeds, they give much more production. So of course they need less hand work. So people shift to go to the cities. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. Huh?
Right. And then there's a, because I feel like land has memories, like a place has its own memories. There's its own, separate from any human thinking, you know, places have their own energy and stuff like that. But then it gets transformed by everyone leaving and by practices, you know, by not putting stuff in the land, by not growing things in the soil, that transforms the soil and makes it, I think, I don't know if it makes it less fertile, but in my heart, it makes it less fertile.
Yes, I agree.
So,
and that's happening in Japan. But now the good news, for example, in Japan, that's happening much more before United States or other countries, is now that there are a lot of young people in Japan is going back to farming.
You know, I work in my backyard most of the time when it's nice. I have a area where that's where I do all my writing and research and stuff like that. And since I started doing that over the last 3 years, we went from having one neighbor that has chickens to now I think I've got 6 or 7 neighbors that all have chickens and a little baby goat, even though the city's not supposed to know that.
I think it's a shift. I mean, I think the new generations are shifting to that. That's a little bit there.
Thank God. It's good. I'm so glad. So, okay. So here's someone that one of the questions that came in: are the seed pods, you can actually grow something in them? Like, will they break through, or is there a hole for everything to come out?
They will break through. We did some tests, and Bosco's had experience in this. And so basically, the clay acts as like a sponge, absorbing the water during the germination process.
Okay.
And it's amazing. Those little sprouts, they look so delicate, but they can just push on through.
That's awesome.
I came also, this idea came also because one day I was in my studio in Casawabi, and the floor is concrete, you know? And then I saw a hole in the concrete that was opening, and it was a seed. I mean, it was not a corn seed, but it was a seed that was breaking the concrete.
That's awesome. Wow. I love the idea of a little seedling being able to break concrete.
Incredible. I came with the idea of, hey, well, it will break. And then we did, of course, I begin to experiment. And all of the seeds we put on they grow. I mean, we normally put 2 or 3 seeds in just in case, in order that if one fails to germinate, the other one.
Right. You know, my mom grew corn.
Oh, yeah.
Up in New York. Probably not far from where you are, in the middle of the city. We had corn. So, yeah. I want to go back a little bit and ask you, Sarah, over the last few years, over the many years, but certainly, you know, when Bosco was here a couple years ago, and there was the Contemporary Art Museum had something that was very much addressing today's political climate and today, and not meaning just elected official political or parties, but just everything going on. And then now again, here's something that's very directly affecting not just the environment and environmental worries, but sense of place and community, which to me is also a political thing. What is kind of what are you and what is the Contemporary Art Museum? What are sort of like some of the goals by having artists like Bosco and other people that you've brought in? Look, what do you want that to do for the community?
I that's a great question. Thank
I know. I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you that, but I just keep on thinking, like, it's been really wonderful. When I looked back at everything that's going on, I was like, this is really brave, like really brave and intentional programming.
Well, I think, you know, the role of the arts and contemporary artists is to really reflect what's happening in society and, you know, and do so in a way that I think other people can't. They often show us things in a way that we haven't experienced them before, or they show us another perspective or approach, maybe a resolution that we haven't thought about or looked to before because we're kind of wrapped up in, you know, the politics of it, or, you know, and there's a certain way when you are able to open your imagination that new ideas, new solutions, new perspectives develop. And I think that's the power that artists have. It's their voices to bring that. And as a contemporary institution and, you know, it's situated within an academic setting, we really want to bring challenging programming and programming that's going to advance resolutions to some of the most critical problems we're facing, you know, whether it's justice, environmental justice, social justice, racial justice, economic inequities. You know, I think that there's a level of communication and empathy that can be developed through art that isn't often articulated in the same way through other forms of communication. And so, you know, people can approach it and find it accessible on a different level.
That's wonderful. And within the academic sec, I mean, I feel like CAM can do things that other museums can't.
Right. I mean, we're a free institution. We don't rely on ticket sales, you know, to bring people in the door. We really want to be accessible to the public and to, you know, provide something that the other institutions in the area, you know, everybody sort of has their own role in the ecology, if you will.
And then, Bosco, could you sort of address the same question from your point of view as an artist who makes work that either very directly or or a little more subtly addresses a lot of different issues going on in our world today? How do you do research before you do work? Is there something that you sort of get obsessive about, and the way that you can understand it is through your hands? And will you talk a little bit about that part of your process?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of research, but also I try to make it as simple and as casual as possible. I truly believe that art gives us tools to understand better the universe and ourselves and and the other humans, and it gives us the tools to change it and to understand it and change it. And that's something that I really believe, not just in my work, but also the philosophy of the foundation we have there. I think when a museum or an institution help the society, giving them tools to understand to change their current reality, it's when art really doing its main function.
You you work in two different places, at least two different places, in Mexico and in New York.
Yes.
Are there more places?
Well, I have also a studio in Barcelona. And I do a lot of site-specific works. I'm going to have a show at during the Venice Biennale in the Palazzo Vendramin Grimiani.
Oh my God, so exciting!
So what goes around comes around, and I'm going to go there for almost a month to do some paintings there. And I love to do site-specific works because they come out completely different than if you would do them in New York or in Mexico. All my work is influenced by the weather, by the humidity, by a lot of different factors.
Is it, I mean, you have these regular studios set up, and then like going to a place like Venice, where there you are, you know, and I was sort of thinking about how you are out of, or you're an other, like you're in Mexico, you're not in New York, so you can look at wherever you're not in a different way. When you're in Venice, you can look at Mexico, New York, or wherever differently. Is that true? Or I might be just making it up in my head.
No, is that true?
And then,
I love the concept of going someplace and prepare the studio, all this kind of warming up. I love it. I love it.
I know that sounds like would be my favorite rituals. I used to own restaurants, and people would hire me to come in and make meals at their house and stuff like that. And I loved being in a new space and being like, all right, let's make the magic.
Exactly.
Totally different, but yes, the same.
Yeah, but it brings new challenges, and it brings freshness. At the end, it's something like new.
No, I want to go back for a moment because you mentioned your paintings, and I have not seen all of your work. I've only seen in person the work that was here last time and is here now. And so your paintings, though, are not just oil
on something.
No, my painting it's reality is acrylic. I mix sawdust with pigments and latex and glue and some fibers, and it's a very textural work that I work in horizontal, and I let the painting. I intervene on the painting no more than 5 days, and then I let the painting go by itself to do their own cracks, their own reaction to the materials.
Mm-hmm. How do you apply it?
With the hands. Everything is with the hands.
Right, that's what I thought.
The painting is on horizontal. I love to have this kind of energy exchange with the painting, so I never use gloves or I never use the...
Do you have to sort of resist your knowledge sometimes? I mean, because if you know, well, I know if I do this, it's going to crack this way or something like that. Like, do you have to be, you know, make...
I try to be as spontaneous as possible and with less duality as possible. I try to disconnect as much as possible. Sometimes I don't even remember when I did the painting what happened, you know? Really go by the senses and just have fun and I'm not thinking, okay, let's put something here and move it over there.
Do you have music on?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't even remember to put the music, you know, like.
Right.
But if I put the music, I will not remember what I was hearing at all.
Right, yeah. Well, sometimes, I mean, I know that I've talked to different artists and sometimes they're sort of, they try to prompt something and along the same lines where they don't want to dictate it, but they are trying to sort of either influence them or make sure they're not influencing themselves through their music choices. So we're great. Well, we're almost out of time, and I know there's a bunch of stuff coming up. So you're going to be in Venice after this.
During the Venice Biennale, I'm doing a solo show at the Palazzo Beltrán Grimani.
It's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
It's a big deal. Big
yeah.
Deal. It's a huge palazzo.
Major.
Curated by Daniela Ferretti and Daking Heart. it's going to be we're going to do an intervention in the whole palazzo with different works of mine. Old works, but also new works that I'm going to do there. Also, I have a current show now at the Dallas Museum of Art that they're showing the spheres on their sculptural garden, and upcoming show with Luciana Brito, my gallery from Brazil, in April. Then also a group show in the Triennale in Milan, in the building of the Triennale in Milan. So it's going to be a busy.
You are going to be busy. Oh, I want to go to Italy so badly.
Yes, I hope you can come to the... Well, the show in Venice is going to be for 5 months, or from April to November.
I've gone to it in the past, and I would love to do it. I better start earning some money. Sarah, what's coming up at the USF or any of your other places that you have a million things going on with?
Well, we've got... Beyond Bosco's show, which is up till March 5th, and I hope everyone will come out and see it. We didn't really get to talk about all the different aspects of the exhibition, but there are, four sort of different bodies of work, and also featuring his Kasawabi Foundation, the work done with children in art and education.
Which is really, and yeah. I'm sorry, we do want to, I mean, we'll get into that, if you don't mind, a couple extra minutes, because I do want to make sure we talk about that, but
yeah.
Please go on.
And so at USF CAM in the spring, which is one of our favorite shows that we do, is the graduating MFA mm-hmm. candidates will be presenting their thesis work. Mm-hmm. And so that's always a really great show to see what the students are working on and as they sort of emerge into their professional careers.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll open probably early May. I'm sorry, I don't have the date on me.
Let's see if I can scroll down and find it while you're talking.
But I also want to acknowledge our amazing staff at CAM and my colleague Leslie Elsasser and the CAM Club student organization that is helping to coordinate the Tabula Rasa Tampa events, both the community workshop and the partnership event with Meacham Urban Farms.
So can we also talk about, and dear listener, that stuff is up on the Art in Your Ear Facebook page and the Art in Your Ear page on WMNF.org. So you can find it there, and we'll put some more information up after the show. So I do want to go back and talk a little bit, real quickly, if you don't mind, about the foundation and about the kids stuff. You know, because that, I will say that I'm not a big children's art person. I gotta say that. I'm not like, it's great. Kids stuff is great. I love kids, all that. But to me, a lot of times the art doesn't speak that much to me. But then at the show, I cannot say that for this show at Bicycle, definitely, there was the very thought-provoking work in there. And so, Bosco, could you just talk a little bit about what your foundation is and what you do in the community with it?
Yes, of course. We have a foundation in Mexico in the coast of Oaxaca named Casawabi, and we work with 14 communities around the foundation. And it's an art residency that we invite 6 artists at a time for periods between 1 month and 3 months. And they do a very specific and strong project with the local communities. Also, we have a clay pavilion that we invite 3 classrooms a week to come and do clay. We want the kids to reconnect with clay, but also to understand art. And we show them all the foundation. And these kids, they go there. We put them classical music. And they have like a cultural day in the foundation. We also put them a movie with content in a movie theater that we have. We show them all the architecture. But these kids, they go and do figures with clay. And when we were talking about the show, we decided that it would be very nice to show some of the figures that these kids do because they are so beautiful and simple and casual.
Yeah. You can see, and do you, so the artists that do the residency, they come with the expectation that they will be working with the community.
They have to work with the community. We give them a studio, but we don't mind if they work or not on their own work. But the thing is that they have to do a very strong project with the local community.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And it's an exchange. It's an exchange of knowledge too, because of course the local communities, they have a very strong tradition, a lot of knowledge about different things. So it's a very beautiful.
That sounds fantastic. That sounds
exchange of ideas, of culture, of. And friendships at the end, so.
Right, yeah. Well, that's ultimately, yeah. And also sort of a demystifying, because I think that as much as people are interested in travel and stuff like that, it's a very different when you go outside of the known area and make yourself available emotionally and intellectually and physically to people who you may not have done that to before, and then that's it. You're transformed. Like, if you're not transformed by that, then you're dead. You have to be transformed.
It's a powerful thing.
So, well, Bosco Sodi and Sarah Howard, thank you so much for coming on Art in Your Ear today. I'm so excited that this worked out. I admire the work so much, and I just want to touch it. Is that a problem that everybody wants to touch it? And then I wish you the best in all the different many things coming up. That's a lot. You got a lot on your plate there, friend.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and I hope everybody can visit the show. It's a really beautiful show, very, very strong. I'm very, very, very happy with the result, and I'm very grateful, Sarah, and all the people from USS Camp too.
Then we should acknowledge the curator at large, Christian Viveros-Vinay, who organized the exhibition, curated the exhibition. And also, I just want to quickly say that we have a new publication format for this exhibition that we're very excited about. So we've got a new 40-page publication to accompany Bosco Sodi's.
Right here, baby. Right here in my hand. Well, thank you both so much. And dear listener, please stay tuned. We'll be right back with lots of stuff to tell you and announcements. But here's some Mexican Institute of Sound. Why not? Mirando a las muchachas.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Enamoradas te dicen.
And that's The Gospel Machine, one of my favorite ever songs. Before that, we heard, Before that, we heard Mirando a las Muchachos with from Mexican Institute of Sound. Hey, I want to let you know a couple things before we get out of here. At Studio at 620, there's an interesting art show. It's called Passover. It's author Antoinette Nwandu. It is going to be February 3rd and then plays through the 13th at Studio at 620. It says that evoking heartbreak, hope, and joy over the 95 minutes, Passover crafts everyday profanities into poetic and humorous riffs. Also going on, the wonderful Matthew McGee is going to be portraying James Beard at the Freefall Theater with a show called I Love to Eat. This should be the name of my autobiography, A Love Story with Food. And that went into previews, goes into previews tonight and then opens up. And that's at Freefall Theater. And these things will be up for your listening pleasure. I want to say hi, of course, to Bob. Thanks, Bob. And then also to 267. You know who you are. We are going to get out of here. You're going to get another hour of Joellen. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but I'm covering for E-Love today. So I will be playing music, an hour of music just after the NPR news, which comes up in a few minutes. Hope that you will stay tuned for that. I have some beautiful, I had so much fun putting together a show for E-Love. It's very inspirational. So I hope you will stick with us on that. I believe Gianna Russo is going to be here next Friday with her new book of poems. And then after that, you guys, we have 1 week and we will be fundraising. WMNF will go into the I Love WMNF fundraiser, and Art in Your Ear has to raise a couple $1,000, friends. So please donate to the show. Please plan on donating if you can afford $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever you can afford. But we have to make our goal. We have to. The more that you I get in ahead of time, the less pitching that we do on the air. So if you're going to give anyway, give now. Give often. Give multiple times. Anyway, we're going to go out of here. You'll please stay tuned again for ultrasounds. I'm covering that. You have been listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF, the best station in the nation. Stay tuned for the NPR News. Whoops, hey, that's not the song. I have a goofy 80s song for you. There you go. That's the one. All right, bye now.